My name is Angie, and I'm an addict.
Hey.
It's good to be anywhere not high today. Whew. You know, I got to check my ego. I get up here in front of the podium, I want to thank the Academy and all that, right? I'm just keeping it real. Let me get a couple of housekeeping rules out the way in my sharing. When I share honestly. I don't dress it up. I don't make up stuff to sound good. And I tend to make people angry when I share because I'm honest. So I'm going to apologize one time for anybody that I may offend in here. We read the literature prior to the gentleman before me speaking, and it pretty much speaks for itself. So I'm one of those people that if you don't hear me quote from the book, it's not because I don't know it, because I live it. But what's in the book is not my experience, so you're not going to hear me talk a lot about what's in the literature because that's not what y'all asked me to share. In my sharing, I am going to take you on a journey, so I advise you to buckle up because it does get rough at times. You know, when I first came to this program, y'all told me I was powerless. I had no problem with powerlessness. But when y'all said that my life was unmanageable, I bucked because I said, look, y'all talked about getting put out and electricity getting cut off and losing jobs and this, that, and the other. And I had not experienced those things. I'm not any better or any worse than anybody in here. My bottom is just where I stopped digging. And I wanted to think prior to getting here that I was a functional addict. I'm getting ready to tell y'all who's an addict. I come from a very close and loving family. You know what I mean? But we had some secrets. You know, I'm not a victim today, but I'm an incest survivor. And my dad felt like sleeping with me was better than sleeping with my mom. And how he got me to keep quiet about it was because it was in my nature to be overprotective of people that I care about. So his threats wasn't to do anything to me. He threatened to do harm to my siblings. So for a long time and most of my life, I carried the burden of trying to protect everybody. I say that to say that people talk about recovery being, you know, you got to go in and this, that, and the other. But I'm one of those people, when I got here, I had to go to the exact nature of mine. I had to get to the core of my being in order for me to start to get better. So people talk about peeling the onion and going layer to layer to layer. I had to go to the core and come out. Because the core was what was rotten. You understand? I'm not one of those people that came to this program, woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to Narcotics Anonymous. That was not the way it happened. You know, I'm the kind of addict that I'll come to your house on a Thursday in January, it'll be May on a Friday, and I'll still be there. Yeah, I'm the only one to ever do that, right? I'm the runner, I'm the housekeeper, I'm the babysitter, you know what I mean? All that. I was extremely naive when I was using at the beginning, and the disease had convinced me that if I always had somebody using with me and didn't touch anything, that I really wasn't on it. But the pettiness soon set in, and I got tired of y'all beating me. So I stood in my mirror and taught myself how to get high one day. And I went from, you know, I had two sisters who were using at the time, and my disease said I'd be a better parent to them, to their children than they were being. So I went downtown, took them to court, and took their kids. At the beginning, I was a very functional and loving aunt. I combed heads, made breakfast, took them to school, picked them up from school, fed them, bathed them, put them to bed. Then I got high. But at the end, because I'm the addict that initially, if you had children in your house, I wouldn't come in your house and use. But at the end, I was sitting in my dining room using while my babies was playing around me. I don't know about y'all, when I used, my drug of choice is crack cocaine. I lived in a 6-block radius. But once I used, all that going outside and all that wasn't happening. So I was stuck, and I would be stuck in my house for days, you know what I mean? And I know that there had to have been times when I had prayed, and every time I prayed, all those prayers were answered. I was like, God, you know, please let the check be on time.
Come on.
And it was always there. Please don't let the people that buy food stamps be out of money by the time I get there. And they were always there, you know? 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, please let somebody knock on my door. And they always did. You know, the day that I hit my bottom, I was sitting in my dining room using, and people who know me have heard this, but, you know, this is the most important part of my story prior to getting here. I was sitting at my dining room table using, and one of my nieces who was 3 probably asked me for something like some water or a sandwich, and I cussed her out. I don't know what the newcomers are calling it these days, but at the time when I was using, we called it getting disturbed. She had totally disturbed me. So I gathered up my utensils and my drugs, and I went in my room, and I shut the door, and I turned the TV on, I turned the sound down, I closed all the blinds. I have not figured out why I had to close all the blinds when I was on the 3rd floor. I have not figured out why the TV had to be on, but the sound had to be down. So now, I'm sitting on my bed and I'm using. And internally I said, I'm so tired of living like this. I ain't get no spiritual awakening. Ain't no lights flicker. I ain't hear no voices. Had I done that, the paranoid addict that I was, I would not be standing here today. But what did happen was a number came across the television screen. Maybe that's why I had to have it on, because God was preparing me. And it said, if you have a problem with cocaine, call this number. I called the number, and the lady said, well, what are you doing? You got a couple of minutes. I need to interview you. I said, hold on. Y'all know what I did, right? I needed some courage. Here's the insanity. I forgot that when I smoke, I can't talk. So now I'm mumbling, trying to tell this lady that I need help. Said, come to this place such and such a day, and we'll do this, that, and the other. And I said, okay. So I felt, you know, my disease, you know, made fill my ego at that point. So I went knocking on those doors of those people that wouldn't let me in no more. Because I talk all the time and I'm using. Y'all don't like to talk. Y'all want to be quiet and I make noises and so you can look the other way and I steal your shit, that kind of stuff, you know. So people got tired of me coming, so they wouldn't let me in. I would knock on the door and they'd be like, shh, they're going to get you. So I go knock on the door and I say, fuck all y'all. I'm getting ready to go to treatment and get my life together. And when I come back, I'm going to be a new me. This is how busy the devil and my disease is. Everybody in that house gave me something that day. They're like, here, boo, we're going to send you off with a bang. Take this, take that, take this. Here, baby. But you can't use it here. Right? But you can have this, right? So I went home and I used it for the first time that I can ever remember. I didn't use it all. Reservation. I wasn't aware of it then, but I know today that was a reservation. Whew. I used them until 15 minutes before I was supposed to be in detox. And I'm not many of y'all from D.C., but some of y'all are. I lived at Stanton Road in Savannah. But I was using in Condon Terrace. But I needed to be at D.C. General. Okay. Y'all ever seen JoJo Dancer? So I'm sitting at the table and I'm using it. And in the back of my mind, that last little bit of consciousness was saying, Angie, you know you got somewhere to be. Right? But the pipe was talking to me. You say, girl, you don't need no help. You just need to go home, take a shower, because I had been up for days stinking. You know, stay here with us. We love you. You're going to be fine. Take another hit. I found the courage to get up that day. I walked from Condon Terrace to Parkland. I went to the payphone and called my mother and said, I need to get to treatment. I got 7 minutes. If I'm not there, I'm going to lose my bed. I like to lie and tell y'all that I packed real neatly. But I threw all my crap in some big green trash bags, dirt and all. And when my parents pulled up, put my bags in the car, they took me over to detox. And while my parents, who were getting old on in years, was taking my bags in the detox, I was taking my last hit in their car. Went to detox and did what they asked me. I took the medicine, gained weight, left there, went to treatment. Went to treatment for 28 days. I did everything and everybody except what I was supposed to do. Y'all might have missed that. When I was in treatment, I did everything and everybody except what I was supposed to be doing. Understand that as a result of that one incident in my life, when my dad did what he did, he would always hug me afterwards and tell me he loved me. Or he would buy me something. When y'all took the drugs and alcohol out of my life, was nothing left for me to do but to do what I knew how to do. I needed attention. I needed to do something with those feelings that were waking up. And then I'm the type of addict, when I'm using, I'm upset. Oh, God. Look, hurry up. If I'm drinking, just hurry up. Because I ain't there with all that. But when my body woke up, I did what I thought I had to do in treatment. You know, so when I left treatment, I came to the Rosa Lock House and Knowledge, and I brought me and all my sick behavior in here with me. Why am I here? Prior to getting here and everything I just shared tells y'all that I was messed up when I got here. My list of people that I've done harm to is longer in recovery than prior to me getting here. Because of that behavior that I came in here with, I called you all consenting adults. I was a predator in the Rooms and Narcotics Anonymous. I must admit that. When you would come up in the room and you would share about being unhappy in a relationship or just getting out of one, I'm the one that came up to you after the meeting and said, boo, in the name of N.A., I'm going to give you my number. We're going to go have coffee, you know, chill, chit-chat, hit a couple of meetings. Then I'm going to have you. And it didn't matter who it was, because depending on what side of the bed I woke up on that day, sometimes I feel like nuts, sometimes I don't. Some of y'all going to get that, some of y'all won't. But none of y'all was off limits to me. So if I said, after I had took you and charmed you, and I said, man, you going to do this, and you said, okay, and I said, you sure you going to be all right with the feeling? You tell me all right, so we did it. All I want you to do now is wash your behind, go home. You don't even got to call me no more. Thank you for your services. I appreciate it. People were talking about, girl, you don't have to be passing around like they do the basket in N.A., and you don't have to be a whore in recovery, and what is all that other shit they were saying? You're going to go in the meeting, it's going to be about 10 people. You're going to slap, but you're going to feel bad. Let me tell y'all something, I didn't feel nothing. I was honest about everything I was doing and who I was doing, and I told you, this all I want. You said you was all right with it. I believed you. We did it. Now, I ain't got no feelings. But I kept sharing about that, and what happened was women in recovery started coming up to me and asking me, you know, to help them. I'm doing the same thing. And I did it for a long time, and the reason being is that nobody told me that they had done it before me, and that I was going to get tired, and that it was going to get old. So I felt like I was the only one doing it. So I made a vow that I'm going to share that part of my story every time I get a chance for men and women, because we come in here and we become vulnerable. Everybody in here don't have your best interest in heart, sad to say. There are a lot of predators in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, and some people are clean but living extremely dirty and not telling you. Some people are not sharing their whole story. You got to listen to what people share, and you have to look at the part that they're not talking about. People in here, you know, only through the grace of God am I not HIV positive, because my story prior to getting here and in recovery says I am qualified, super qualified for it. But there are a lot of people in here who are positive and living with AIDS that ain't telling people. Hurt people hurt people. People say don't, you know, try to make the literature say what they wanted to say and tell you, don't get in a relationship for your first year. That's not what it says. What it says is a terribly painful area. So if you're not all right with who you are and loving self, stay out of it. But if you want to know who you are, why you do what you do, and why you act the way you act, you can do one of two things in here. You can get in a relationship, or you can work the steps. Either way, you're going to find out who you are. When I came in this program, I came in here 6 months clean. They told me I had 11 months to live. I came in here with cancer of the uterus, a malignant tumor in my colon, a malignant tumor over my womb, and a lump in one of my breasts. Anybody's not familiar with the term malignancy, what that means is even if they remove it, still a possibility that it'll spread. I went to a meeting and I shared about it, and y'all told me to let go and let God. And I say, how you do that? I ain't never been able to let go of nothing, whether it was healthy or unhealthy. I have never been able to just walk away and let go of anything. I hoard people. I hoard feelings. I'm starting to hoard clothes. I need to get that shit together, but that's a whole nother story. But I'm a hoarder. I don't like letting go because I don't like change. I don't like starting over. I will stay in an unhealthy relationship because I don't feel like letting somebody see me undress and get naked all over again. Because I got body image issues. People always laugh when I share this, but it's real. I'll stay in a relationship because, you know how you get in that relationship and you go to their house and you eat that food and it's rich? You gotta go to the bathroom, right? Getting over that first boo-boo in somebody else's house, I'll stay in a relationship just because I don't want to go through that again. I know I'm the only one who's ever done that too, but come on. Anyway, just before my first anniversary, I kept coming back, and there are a lot of people in this room who were here for me, and I kept sharing, and my sponsor at the time told me, you know, keep sharing about it until you're comfortable. And I would go on the meeting, and I would share, and I would be talking about, you know, having cancer and stuff, and people would be like, oh, here she go again, so I shut down. Till my sponsor came up to me one day and said, share it until you feel better. Be unbothered with what they think about it. So I did. And as a result, instead of me thinking, y'all have no idea what I'm going through, don't know what I'm feeling, I stayed here long enough and did the work. And I realized that in any issue, situation in my life, if I come to the meeting and share about how I feel about it, everybody in the room can identify. Doesn't matter what the situation is, I need to be talking about how I feel about the situation. I needed to be telling y'all how scared I was. I needed to be telling y'all how I had things coming out of, you know, just, I couldn't control my body fluids. You know, the chemo was making me sicker than making me better. But I kept coming. And just before my first anniversary, I asked my higher power that I found in Rooms Narcotics Anonymous, you know, is this where I'm supposed to be? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Had my anniversary. That next week, I went to the doctor, and one of the tumors I had completely disappeared. Come on. That was all I need. People talking about seeing miracles and coincidence in other people's lives. I was seeing it in my own. So I kept coming. And because those women kept asking me for help, I decided that I wouldn't be one of those people to tell them, stop being a whore, and then I'll sneak around the corner and do it myself. I started doing work. And as a result of the work that I was doing, I started to find out who I was and why I acted the way I acted. So I learned how to counteract my reaction. You know, I got a friend that died from, she had seizures, and I remember asking her how she know when it's coming, because she used to call me and say, I'm going to leave you on the phone because I'm about to have a seizure. And I said, well, how do you know? She said, there are a series of events that happen. So in my life, there's a series of events that happen before I'm in a relapse mode, before I'm about to act out. You know what I mean? I'm in tune with who I am today. I've been sick off and on in this program, and I've gone through a lot of stuff. I share that to tell y'all that things going to happen in here. Just because you get clean don't mean it. Things going to happen. When we're using our body, for some reason, becomes empowered, and ain't nothing hurting it. But the minute we get clean, everything starts breaking down. I fight for my life every day. As a result of the cancer, doctors told me I'd never have children, would never be a mom. I'm here to tell y'all that they're a lie. I had a hysterectomy. So there's nothing down there to make a kid with, so I was inclined to believe them. But as a result of me being in touch through this program and you people with the fact that I have a mental disease too, I hear voices from time to time. I'm extremely depressed from time to time. They say I'm bipolar and schizophrenic. Okay. I know I'm crazy. I do what I'm supposed to do to take care of me. What saddens me is a lot of y'all in here fucked up and don't know it. Thinking that what you do on a daily basis is normal. It's not normal to wake up and want to die every day. It's not normal to be so dependent on a relationship that you can't function when it's over. It's not normal. I said I was never going to tree box. I was in recovery crawling in the mud, trying to see who they left me for. That's not normal. You know what I mean? So, I'm sitting on the subway one day. Let me speed this up so I can bring it on home. I love you. I'm sitting on the subway. I was wearing a Walkman at the time. Now they got these iPods and all this whole other crap, but it was a Walkman when I was riding the subway. And I was listening to my favorite hymn, The Battle by Yolanda Adams. I tend to shout from time to time. I'm not ashamed of my high power. There was a girl sitting next to me and tapped me, and she said, can you pray for me? And I said, tell me what it is. I call it out in prayer. She said, I'm pregnant. My husband is in Iraq. This is not his child. She said, he respectfully told me that he doesn't think he can love a baby that's not his. The program kicked in immediately. I said, here, boo, here go my number. Here go my past number. Give us a call. We're going to pray you through that thing. That went on back to doing what I was doing after I prayed with her. The door chimed. She said, excuse me to get off. And my spirit said, girl, you better speak up. And I said, hey, I ain't got no kids. You really can't keep that baby. I'll take it. She called me a couple of days later. She asked me if I was serious, and I told her, yeah. She said, get a lawyer. I did that. She was 4.5 months pregnant. I went through the whole rest of the pregnancy with her. I caught my son coming out the couch. Trying to swallow hard right now, you know. My son is the love of my life. I live and I breathe for him. is so good to me that he knows exactly what I needed. Because he knew I was going to get sick again. And I've been sick. But you know what? I'm going to see my son be a man. Trust me. He's 5. I'm almost 50. Y'all do the math. I'm going to be here when he become a man. And if my high power decide to come and get me then, that's fine. But I'm going to see him be a man by any means necessary. I don't know if y'all got anything out of what I shared. But I know I'm free today. And I'm free because this program and you people allow me to do that. I've been, because of my son, I made the decision to kind of be out of a relationship. Be careful who you choose to parent with, too. Because I was in a relationship when I got my son. And, you know, anyway. So I've been by myself for 5 years, sexually. I've been taking care of me. I ain't say I ain't been coming. I said I've been by myself. So I made a decision recently to allow somebody in my life. Let me tell y'all how difficult that is for me. I have to unlearn being alone and relearn allowing somebody in. I was riding down here and they were driving. I was quiet. They didn't understand the quietness. But I was trying to soothe my spirit so that I can share a message of recovery and not a lot of mess in here today. It's difficult when people aren't in the program to understand how it works. But you know what? I ain't a quitter. They're good folks. I'm just going to have to learn how to allow people. See, I take care of everybody, and I think it's just time for me to let somebody take care of me, and I'm having a problem with it. Nobody's ever died and came back and told me what it's like. So when I wake up in the morning, I don't know if I'm living or dead. So sometime in the course of that day, I get a paper. I read the obituary. If I don't see my name, I know I'm still here. I'm Angie from D.C. Thank you for letting me share.